Podcast Rebellion. We are back at it again here in the Davis Ford State Farm Studio. I'm your host, Zach Berry. Before I welcome in JUCO All-American to discuss Saturday's just absolutely bonkers win over Arkansas and the rest of the comings and goings in the SEC and around the country, I do want to remind you of the sponsors that make this show possible. I mentioned we are in the Davis McCord State Farm Studio. He is your one-stop shop in Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Mississippi for the service you deserve at the price you want. Stop looking around. Give Davis McCord a call, 901-755-6110. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Podcast also brought to you by the good folks at LB's Meat Market, the inaugural sponsor of this year's show. Greg and the folks over at 2008 University Avenue in Oxford are giving out a pretty ridiculous deal. We talked about how bonkers the winner of Arkansas was. This deal is bonkers. $20, 16-ounce prime strip, and a pack of sausage. All you got to do is tell Greg or anybody else at the shop that you heard about Podcast Rebellion, you heard about Red Cup Rebellion, you read, you listen to the show, anything like that, and you will get the 16-ounce prime strip and a pack of sausage for $20. That's the best protein anywhere for all of your Ole Miss grilling needs at Red or LB's Meat Market, I should say. All you got to do is tell them that you read Red Cup or you listen to the show. Podcast also brought to you by the good folks at Sola on South Lamar. Chef Erica and her team of food and beverage enthusiasts are bringing top-notch cuisine and libations to you 6 days a week. Whether it's happy hour 3 to 6, fresh squeeze, margaritas, ramen, 2-for-1 Moscow mules, all of that and more. They are bringing the biggest, could be the biggest, the best and brightest to you in-house or via curbside pickup. Check them out, solaoxford.com, or call them at 662-238-3500 and place your order today. JUCO, it was quite the journey on Saturday.
Yes, it was.
Ole Miss rebounded early, went up 21-14 at the half. Ole Miss is now 8-0 under Lane Kiffin when leading at halftime, but despite holding Arkansas to 14 first half points, the Hogs really I would say bucked their head, or you know, maybe use their tusk a little bit there, scored 37 in the second half to really make things awfully dicey for Ole Miss fans. But As most of you saw, I'm sure, Ole Miss held off at the end, 52-51. General thoughts, takeaways, ramblings from this one, because I'm sure a lot of people got pretty toasty early Saturday morning because of this one.
I did. Yeah, I think before we get too far into the detail of the game and everything, one interesting thing that I experienced, and I talked with a couple of other friends who are kind of in the same boat, is we beat the number 13 team in the country and didn't feel great. I mean, certainly it's good to win, right? But when you have a win over a top 15 opponent, you expect to be kind of on cloud 9. Because it's not that common, right, at Ole Miss. But I don't know. I just had this sinking feeling in spite of winning, because it was so crazy, I guess, right? Going back and forth, and, you know, Lane Kiffin afterwards did nothing to make you feel enthusiastic, rightfully so. You know, he said things about how we played the worst possible defense we possibly could, and they just happened to kind of lose. But yeah, I just think that it's weird to come away from a game like that, big win, all objective metrics suggest that it was a big thing, you know, they were a fantastic defense, all that stuff, but just come away from it kind of feeling like, huh, instead of just total excitement and jubilation. I mean, I poured a glass of Angel's Envy, which I really love, after the game, and kind of celebrated. But yeah, I don't know, I just it felt strange. I don't know if you experienced that at all.
Watching the game, I got to a point, I guess, late second, early third, where I was quite perplexed by the play calling. It was heavy run, almost ran the football 49 times. I thought that Matt Corral had a ton of success early when he was throwing the football. Arkansas was really hanging back and giving a big cushion. I thought that they would try to really work the quick game and try to get them off balance. But Jeff Levy and Lane Kiffin and Jake Thornton as well must have saw something on film, or they were seeing something live during the game that was giving them the warm and fuzzies on running the football, because they were just hammering inside zone, mixing in some outside stuff just to keep them honest. But I mean, they were just heavy dose of Henry Parrish, Snoop Connor, and then Matt Corral ran it 15 times. Most of them were scrambles. Not all of them were design runs, but almost ran for 324, 6.6 yards a carry, and five touchdowns. So outside of that, though, honestly, like I felt like the game went almost, I wouldn't say exactly like I thought it would. I thought it was going to be a shootout. I thought it was going to hit the over and then some. But Arkansas hung around. I thought they would kind of fade down the stretch, because I thought that Ole Miss would have a little more firepower offensively. But the defense, and I guess another week of – I'd have to go back and look and see what the yards before contact statistic was for this one. Again, I thought that they were in position most of the time to make plays, but just the tackling has just gotten to where it's so poor. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously a 2-point conversion to win, it's going to be pretty nerve wracking for anyone. I mean, I thought as soon as Arkansas started driving at the end there, I was telling the folks I was with, I said, if they score here, they're going for two, or at least I would, I wouldn't play for overtime.
So let's actually talk about that real quick. And then I think we could sort of walk through the offense and the defense, that sort of thing. But that decision to go for two, I was actually, if I were an Arkansas fan, I would have not liked the decision to go for two. I mean, certainly, like, look, hindsight, it's obvious that, you know, it would have been good to kick. But even going in, like, I was thinking, you know, typically I know that there is a lot of the typical wisdom is that you're on the road, you're in a hostile environment, let this one play decide it instead of having to go in a slugfest back and forth in the oddity of college overtime. But I actually thought that, you know, if we look at the statistics so far in the game, Arkansas was 8 for 8 in the red zone. And on touchdowns, right? Mm-hmm. And Ole Miss was 3 for 3, but just scored from far, so it didn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I think that at that point, if you're Sam Pittman, you have to say, like, well, my offense is consistently performing well in that area that I'd be getting the ball anyway.
Sure.
And you know, the Ole Miss defense can't stop anything. And so, you know, I have to put something on my defense and just kind of hope that they're able to force a field goal sometime where we can then score a touchdown or something like that. I don't know. It just didn't seem like the let this one random odd play decide everything was the move I would have made. But I don't know what your thoughts are.
You know, people go back and forth on when's the right time to go for two. To win a game. Most people think when you're on the road, you want to do it. Most people think when you're at home, you don't, because you have the home field advantage, all that. I just thought that the way Arkansas was just moving pretty easily up and down the field, that I just thought with the momentum, with how quickly they scored before Ole Miss retook the lead, and then how quickly they drove down the field to get within a point of tying it and within two of winning the ball game. I just figured the way Kendall Briles coaches, he probably had 4 or 5 2-point conversion plays in his back pocket ready to go. And I think that was something that he just kind of considered, let's roll the dice. And Sam Pittman said as much in the post game that he had told the offense that if there was little to no time left, they were going to do it. And I think you might have a better memory than me. I think Ole Miss had already used their final timeout, I believe. I have to go back and look at. I have to go back and look at the graphic to see because it'll show all the graphic.
I'm not sure.
Oh, they had one left. They had one timeout left.
Yeah.
So that's also a risk. Is if you line up for your 2-point conversion, Ole Miss could have called a timeout once they see what they line up in to kind of adjust. Which in that case, I'm sure Arkansas had something else they could have done. But I went back and rewatched the game, and watching that final play, it looked like they were trying to work a shovel pass in there, and Ole Miss actually blitzed and disrupted it. And I think Jefferson kind of panicked and just kind of heaved it to someone in the end zone because there were three guys all around each other in the end zone. And I think that was just some eye candy, and they were trying to hit the shovel pass to the running back underneath. And I think with the blitz disrupted the timing, and then it looked like Chance Campbell and AJ Finley were kind of right there, whether intentional or unintentional, if they knew that the shovel pass was coming. But I think that's what they were going for, and Ole Miss did a nice job of just getting in Jefferson's face and creating pressure. But to answer your question, that was a long-winded roundabout way. If I'm coaching Arkansas's offense, I would have gone for two just because you've got the hot hand at quarterback. He's got the confidence. Your offense is churning. And I like their matchups on the outside. I honestly thought they were going to try to throw a fade to Treylon Burks and just either he makes a hell of a catch to win the game.
The 2-point conversion fade is the dumbest call ever in the world.
I mean, at that point, I mean, he was manhandling anybody who was wide across from him. So I think at that point, you just throw it to your best player.
But I mean,
either that or a back shoulder, because the back shoulder is just so hard to defend. So it was interesting though. I think the shovel pass was probably a good call. You're so close and so everything's so compact right there. I was shocked that they didn't do some kind of option or just try to run it right at Ole Miss. That's what I kind of thought they would do, because they were
when I saw the way that
they were averaging 6 yards a carry.
Yeah, when I saw the way that they had lined up, I expected KJ Jefferson to roll left and kind of try to have
run pass option.
Yeah, like an RPO, but also like potentially, what is his name? Rocket Sanders. Kind of moves with him in sort of a traditional speed option kind of thing.
And then Ole Miss couldn't defend it all day.
Well, and also then like all of our defenders are over to the right, you know, like you've got things clogged over there. So,
right. You run away from the numbers and hope that someone's late and you outnumber them, and then it's an easy, you win the game.
Right. Yeah. That was what I expected them to do, but you know, whatever. I'm glad they did what they did. It was also interesting that, I mean, I guess we got a lot of pressure pretty quickly, but he got so far from the line of scrimmage before even, you know, making a play, because he had to run back immediately. I kind of expected a play that involved more of a running threat from KJ Jefferson to set up a shovel pass or something like that.
Friend of the show and weekly co-host Austin Gray, who's on our legal gambling council, he went back and did a rewatch, and he said that Ole Miss blitzed twice in the game. The first time, Chance Campbell sacked KJ Jefferson. The second time,
I don't think that was a called blitz.
Oh, it was delayed.
Yeah, but I think it was maybe not even like a called delayed blitz, right? Like it was just a, you see something, you go for it kind of.
Okay, maybe. Play. But either way.
But maybe not. I don't know. Yeah.
Creating pressure disrupted what Jefferson was doing. Because, man, if you go back and do the rewatch, Joe Tessitore at least 39 times talks about how much time Jefferson had to throw. And look, I don't care how good your secondary is. I don't care how good your linebackers are. You can't cover guys for 5 or 6 seconds. It's
no.
Alabama guys don't do it.
But I do think it's funny whenever they would say, like, he has all sorts of time. It's like, yeah, well, you know, there are three players trying to get to him, and there are six players stopping those three players from getting to him.
Yeah. The other time they blitzed was on the 2-point conversion.
And so 2 for 2 on blitzes.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have blitzed it like, 5 or 6 times.
Yeah. I'll say this, going on the other side of the field, on the 2-point conversion play where Matt Corral was, Liu Kang kicked in the face.
Decapitated.
There was a face mask on it. It doesn't matter because a face mask is a face mask. I think it was unintentional from the Arkansas guy as he was jumping to try to knock down the pass, but he grabbed Corral's face mask. If you go back and watch, I don't know if you noticed this too. I thought that play was going to be a throwback to Plumlee because he was, motioning close to the line of scrimmage and then they rolled. I thought that it was going to be a throwback to Plumlee. And if they did do that, there was nobody over there. Uh-huh. Maybe that'll be something they bring back out later this year. But since I brought up Plumlee, let's kind of dive right into the offense before we hit the break and talk defense. And we'll just start here. I thought the way they used Plumlee on Saturday was perfect. He had one rush for 4 yards, but he also had a couple catches, one big one on the sideline. I thought that it was a nice way of getting him involved with just quick, easy touches, whether by handing it off outside of the long catch on the sideline, which was just kind of a scramble drill. And a nice job by Plumlee to get upfield and then just a hell of a throw from Corral. I thought that it was nice. I mean, they got him the football in very easy, simple ways. That's not too convoluted for him to figure out a route tree or how to, deke a defender to get open. I think they're going to have to use him more because still have the uncertainty of whether Mingo's coming back at all. And then they're just trying to find playmakers over there. Dennis Jackson had a big catch for 10 yards. Ja'Cory Pearson had a couple catches. Chase Rogers had a couple snags to move the chains. I think they really need to push for tight end or H-back or something just to use the middle of the field. But overall, I mean, Corral was 14 of 21. He was pretty surgical. I mentioned in the post-game column that Braylon Sanders and Dontario Drummond each had two catches apiece, but they were over 200 something yards and they had two touchdowns. So both of them had one. Sanders had a 68 yarder and Drummond had a 67 yarder. So score from far, literally. But it was, look, as advertised, man, banner day for the offense.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to rain on anybody's parade, but this team would be total garbage without Matt Corral. There are still good players. Like there are, there would be some running game and all that kind of stuff, but like he is just able to make so much happen that takes a team from what would be probably like, I don't know, the third or fourth worst team in the SEC to contending for, some interesting things. Like I'm not going to go so far as to say that there's really much hope of making it to Atlanta or anything. I actually still predict an 8-4 finish, which is how I came into the season. But I think that he's really fascinating. Your point about Plumlee is an interesting one. I mean, I hate to overstate too much because he accounted for 36 yards of offense, right? But I think that this is the first time that we've ever seen Plumlee involved this season in a way that is not just like, Lane Kiffin had mentioned that he likes to try to get Plumlee the ball to get people to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't that sort of gimmicky kind of thing, right? Like each play, the run and the two catches were very much legit plays by Plumlee. I actually thought that he really did some good stuff on those. And it wasn't just like the person who was playing his position would get it no matter what anyway. And, didn't really make a difference that it was him. I think that he really played good football during that. And again, that's only three touches. And it's not like he had a huge explosive play or anything, but it'd be interesting to see them utilize him a little bit more moving forward. It's fascinating to me that he made such a big difference in the Indiana game, the bowl game last year. And that was with like a week of practicing at receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And then now that, I guess there's more competition theoretically at receiver because, they have Ja'Cory Pearson. But it seems like very little changed. And then suddenly he's like not at all involved, which is a little bit strange to me. But again, I don't want to talk too long about him. I think that the running game is something I would like to go back and look at. I noticed, obviously, look, Ole Miss ran for 324 yards, but I noticed a lot of very short gains and then, you know, the huge explosive plays. Whereas I think that with Arkansas, there was a good, on their end, there was a good bit more of like reliably 6 to 7 yards. And I don't necessarily remember that being the case for Ole Miss. I know that like Lane Kiffin even made a point of mentioning that there was only, I think, -6. There were only 6 yards lost in rushing attempts. So that's awesome, right? You don't want to lose a lot of yardage, but I don't think that we were able to consistently pick up 6 or 7 when we wanted it. And in a game where we averaged 6.6, you'd kind of hope to be able to see something like that.
Yeah. And like I said, at the top of the show, they very clearly, had found something on the interior. And, you know, we talked about it last week on our preview show about how good, the two Williams, I'm trying to think of a clever way to talk about them. One of them, Zach Williams, I can't remember the other one's name, but their edge rushers are really good. And look, I mean, Nick Broeker got co-offensive lineman of the week in the SEC. He did a nice job handling one of them, if not both of them, if they had moved them around. But they were having a ton of success running right at Arkansas. And, you know, I kind of say that a lot. You know, that's how you slow down a pass rush. Either run right at it or, you know, throw a screen. But they were, I don't know. I mean, once Henry Parrish and Snoop Connor got going, I think they just kind of were like, we're just going to ride this. And then once we can really get Arkansas to kind of creep up a little bit at the third level, that's when they went for the big play. And then you saw a lot of setups in the first half with a lot of the routes that they were running with Sanders and Drummond on the outside. They were running some in routes, a lot of short stuff, and then trying to take the deep shot here and there. But a lot of those routes were turning into double moves, or they were running some combo stuff. And you saw it on the one to Drummond where Pearson ran it out and Corral gave it a pump fake. Both guys bit, and then Drummond was just wide open. And then it's hard because of the angle of the camera on the Sanders long touchdown. You couldn't really see what happened, but it was very clearly Corral was able to use his eyes, move his shoulders a little bit, and got the guys in the secondary for Arkansas to kind of come up. And, you know, it only takes a split second to where if you get flat-footed, you know, for half a second, 1 second, and then the guys behind you. I thought the offense did the play calling. I thought Kiffin and Levy did a nice job of just really going with your strength, and that's running the football. That's what they want to do. They run to set up the pass. That's how they've operated since they got to Oxford, led the conference in rushing a year ago in yards per game. And I just thought that it was just kind of a masterclass in play calling and just kind of, you know, sticking with what works. And then Matt Corral is just, like you said, he's good enough to where he can pick his spots, and 14 to 21 for 287. It's pretty damn good. So I think he was averaging, I think it was 13.7 yards per attempt or per completion. So they were, you know, trying to score from far if they weren't doing it with the run game. So can't give enough credit to the offensive line. They were banged up. Caleb Warren was out. I thought, going back and doing the rewatch, I thought Jordan Rhodes and Cedric Melton did a phenomenal job stepping in at left guard. Mainly on run plays. There were several times I saw both of them just absolutely mauling people up front. It was pretty impressive to see for two guys that have played sparingly. I don't know how much Cedric Melton has played. I know Jordan Rhodes has gotten in, and he's got SEC experience. He's a grad transfer from South Carolina, in case folks forgot about him. But Cedric Melton's a guy that came in and was impressive. And pass blocking, there are some limitations there. Rhodes is more of a guard. And then Melton's just young. So he's just going to, you know, eventually, you know, you would hope get better at pass blocking. But yeah, I mean, I thought that it was just a nice mix of sticking with the run game and sticking to the plan, and then using the best quarterback in the country to hurt them downfield.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I don't want to harp on Matt Corral and how good he is that long, but the going 4 of 5 on fourth down overall as a team was the difference in the game, right? I mean, third down, Ole Miss actually was only 5 of 14, which is not all that good. And in comparison, Arkansas was 7 of 13. But look, fourth down matters, and we need to realize that we're no longer a team that's going to treat every scenario as three down territory, and that honestly, more often than not, we will treat scenarios like four down territory, which is really interesting and has to be really difficult to play against as a defense. Like, even if you, obviously, if you're Alabama and you stop us every time, then it's not debilitating. But, you know, when the defense gets 1 out of 5 stops, it has to be crushing, right? Because it's like, well, you can't just say like, oh, all we have to do is stop them here, stop them from getting it, because you know that we're going to go for it again. And it just makes it hard to be able to consistently meet the goal of stopping us from getting 10 yards four times in a row.
I mean, I think it's pretty, it has to be just absolutely just gut-wrenching for a defense to get a stop and force a third and or a fourth and medium or even a fourth and short after, you know, slowing down Ole Miss's, you know, high powered offense and how well they're running the football, and you get a stop on, you know, a third and four and it's, you know, fourth and two, or, you know, you get an incomplete pass and it's fourth and six, and, you know, Ole Miss doesn't even check up. And for those that, you know, might still be on the fence about analytics, or it might just think it's stupid to do it because of what happened in the Alabama game, well, I'll tell you this, you better start to like analytics, because one, I can't remember if it was the first one or the second one. I believe it was the second one. There was a fourth down that was kind of iffy, and it was in minus territory, and Ole Miss went forward and got it. And then the next play, Snoop Connor darts untouched for a touchdown. So if you don't trust analytics and you punt it away, that doesn't happen. Now I know that's picking out a situation where it worked, because there are certainly plenty of situations you can show, well, they went for it here and didn't get it. But yeah, I mean, that's the way they're going to operate. You know, I've talked to a couple of people close to the program that, you know, Kiffin has, you know, that they've made the comparison to Moneyball, where there's someone that's on the staff that is the analytics guy, like basically like the Jonah Hill of the staff, that has all the numbers, has all the situations broken down percentage wise of, you know, all right, can we get this first down? Can we not get this first down? What's the down and distance normally? What's the, you know, success rate for this down and distance? You know, like, they have all of this. Like, this isn't just some like, oh, you're playing a video game and we're just winging it. Like, no. This is a very thorough, thought out process. Like, when Kiffin says he has a book, like, he has a legitimate book of like situations and tendencies. So, yeah, I mean, that's just how they're going to operate. And look, I personally love it. I mean, as someone who loves offense, I'm a little biased with how they treat fourth downs, but I think it's just the way of the future now. I think you see more and more college and NFL people more leaning towards analytics and just really rolling the dice. And, you know, it's an offensive game now, so you got to score your points.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take our break here. When we come back, we'll, I guess, begrudgingly talk about the defense. well, there were some positives, but more negatives. But we'll discuss it, and then we'll look ahead to Tennessee. So hang tight, hear from the sponsors, and we'll be right back.
It's Zach again. Podcast Rebellion, to remind you of our lovely sponsors here at the show. If you like New Orleans-inspired cuisine, go see Kelly English and the good folks in Memphis at Second Line or Restaurant Iris for some fantastic food and cocktails. You can also travel down to the coast to Magnolia House in Biloxi at Harrah's Gulf Coast. Blackjack, craps, slots, southern cooking, cocktails, what's not to like? All three fantastic establishments, part of the Kelly English Restaurant Group. Good food, good people, good cocktails. It can't be beat. That's Second Line Restaurant Iris in Memphis and Magnolia House in Biloxi. Speaking of good food, if you're in Oxford, go see Greg and the good folks at LB's Meat Market, the inaugural sponsor of this year's podcast, on University Avenue across from Kroger. Celebrate with the best protein for your Ole Miss grilling needs with Greg and the rest of the folks there. And be sure to tell them that Red Cup sent you for exclusive deals and promotions. Remember, the Philly combo is back for just $10 right now. And you've got your lunch specials 11 to 3:30, Monday through Friday. That's LB's Meat Market on University across from Kroger. Arby's is full of shit. LB's has the meats. Speaking of Oxford, if you're looking to get some libations going, be sure to check out Wonderbird Spirits, North Mississippi's first distillery. It's a quick little 8-minute drive south of Oxford on Old Taylor Road, and it's the only spot in the Magnolia State for a true grain-to-glass gin experience. The space is fantastic. Chan and the rest of the guys there are doing some fantastic stuff. Go there, get a tour, do a tasting, or you could do both. Inquire about maybe renting it out for a private event, maybe a anniversary, a wedding reception, a rehearsal dinner, something. The place is amazing. That's Wonderbird Spirits, North Mississippi's first distillery in Taylor, Mississippi. And be sure to follow them on Instagram for all their latest updates and comings and goings there at Wonderbird. Speaking of libations, if you're in Memphis and you're looking to stock the cooler this year, Old Dominic on South Front Street is your place to go. Just like Wonderbird, you can go there for a tasting, for a tour, or both. And be sure to check out the rooftop bar, which is super awesome, has some great views of downtown Memphis, of the Mississippi River. You can try their Healing Station High Rye Bourbon, the Memphis Toddy, the Memphis Vodka, or the new Honeybell Vodka. You can get it all there or at your local package store. So celebrate with that Healing Station Bourbon, a very small batch high rye bourbon by the folks at Old Dominic. It's a bold classic whiskey with notes of stone fruit, dark cherry, and just the right amount of spice and heritage that dates back to 1866. You can enjoy it neat or even in your favorite cocktail like an old fashioned. It's got a mash bill of 52% corn, 44% rye, and 4% malt. Healing Station stands alone in its category of high rye bourbons. So you could do that, or you can enjoy a quick taste of Memphis Toddy before the game this weekend, and then you can wind down with that Healing Station afterwards. So, like we always say, ask your package store where you can find Healing Station by Old Dominic. And, as always, OD encourages you to share a sip responsibly. And last but certainly not least, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, make it a Clark Ford vehicle. Corey Clark and the rest of the folks in Amory, Mississippi on Highway 25 are committed to finding you a new vehicle today. Be sure to browse their inventory online, request more information about the vehicles, set up a test drive, and inquire about financing all online. If you want to do it a little old school, maybe conversate via telephone, you can give them a call at 662-257-1900 and get in a new Ford today.
And we are back here, Podcast Rebellion, recapping Ole Miss's 52-51 win over the Arkansas Razorbacks. All right, JUCO, we'll talk defense now. As I mentioned, I need to see if I can get my hands on the yards before contact statistic. That was actually pretty telling in the Alabama game, that Ole Miss was in position more times than not to make plays, whether it was Bryce Young scrambling or Brian Robinson running the football. I don't know. I don't have it handy right now, but man, we'll start negative and then we'll work our way towards the positives before we move on to Tennessee. But it was another frustrating day for DJ Durkin and the defense. Gave up 676 total yards. KJ Jefferson, who coming into this game was not super efficient throwing the football. Most of his, I guess, success or chunk plays were coming via fades or back shoulder throws to Treylon Burks. I think that it was just more of a I don't know if it's putting a magnifying glass on it, but again, it's just SEC quality depth. This team is still lacking there, and this staff is doing their best to alleviate that issue with recruiting and transfer portal and shifting to a 3-2-6 because they feel better about their secondary players than they do about the front seven. But man, it was frustrating at times because Arkansas just kind of had their way with the Ole Miss defense on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that it can be one thing I'll say before we get super critical, which is deserved, right? Like being critical makes sense. But Alabama and Arkansas were going to be the two toughest teams for the 3-2-6 to match up against anyway. Because they're very capable of just pounding it down their throat. And that's what the 3-2-6 fails at. And, you know, it's designed to take on more of the spread teams that we'll be seeing at different points of the season, right? Like Mississippi State is going to be a very different game than Arkansas. And Liberty, of course, will be a different game. And even Tennessee will be a different game this next week. Alabama and Arkansas have an identity of being able to pound it up the middle, and the 3-2-6 doesn't handle that well. But it's really difficult to switch for a two-game season or two games in the season to like no longer running the defense that you've been preparing the entire season to do. I'm not defending it. I actually don't think that switching to the 3-2-6 was a very wise decision overall. But I'm just giving them their due that it. We could be a little bit overplaying or overweighting the opponents that we've actually just faced. That being said, it's clear that the team can't get any pressure with the three, right? And so that's okay if you're playing against a team that is incapable of picking up relatively easy completions reliably, right? Like if you're just playing against somebody who's totally off when he's not even being pressured, then sure, that's fine. But otherwise, you're just going to continue to see these long, long drives that are drawn out and drawn out and drawn out, and the opposing offense has it for 12 plays and then they score a touchdown. Because the whole like keep it all in front of you for 8 seconds means that ultimately people are going to get open and then pass plays are completed, right? And so if the problem with the defense schematically is that you can run against it, and the problem that we're also encountering is that because we never blitz and never get any pressure, anyone can pass against it because you can't defend someone forever. Like no corner can stay with a receiver for 20 seconds. And so then it's like, well, then what is it accomplishing for us, right? Like what goals is it helping us meet as a team? And the answer is really nothing at the moment. And so again, like getting back to Alabama and Arkansas are maybe not the greatest measuring sticks because of what they can do up the middle or even just like in the interior running game. And so hopefully over the next few weeks, we'll have a better sense of what the defense can actually do against a team that is not built for that. But I don't really have all that high of hopes overall for the unit. Obviously there are pieces that are interesting. Last year, my big gripe about the defense, there were many, but was like, who's the good player? Who's the good player on the defense, you know? And it wasn't really all that easy to tell. Whereas this year, I think it's clear that Chance Campbell is good. It's clear that, I don't know, the safeties, Otis Reese, AJ Finley, Kedron Smith can do some things. I'm not ready to say yet they're like destined for the NFL or anything like that. And I think Sam Williams is playing relatively well. It's just impossible to do anything when he's doubled every single play. But I think that it's easier to see, okay, there are a few components, a few things that make sense. And that wasn't really the case last year. To your point, like a lot of it comes down to they'd be in the right place at the right time to make the play just like they were supposed to. And then four of our defenders would be dragged by their running back an extra 4 yards. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, then what are you going to do? Like, how can you possibly, you know, oh, we'll call it so that there will be a fifth defender who gets on him, you know, like that's an impossible thing. And so some of that is just like, a lot of our players are bad. And, you know, when you have a major lack of talent that can't consistently tackle a player, even with help, then it's going to be really hard to do anything.
Yeah. And I think I'm trying to think of how I can decipher this. I mean, I feel like you kind of limit what you can do blitz wise when you have six defensive backs on the field, unless you're consistently bringing pressure off the edge with the extra defenders that are in the secondary. I think that that's kind of what they're going for with the 3-2-6, because at least against Louisville, I thought that they were pretty clever about how they disguise blitzes. And look, I don't think one person is going to drastically change how the defense operates, but I do think they missed Jacob Springer a lot. He was extremely active in the Louisville game. He was creating pressure and or making plays behind the line of scrimmage. I think they missed his ability to get after the quarterback. But
well, and Kiffin mentioned that in his press conference as well.
Yeah, I mean, like that's kind of that hurts to not have a guy like that with his experience playing a ton of defense for Navy, being an all-conference guy there, making a ton of tackles, making a ton of plays. They miss that type of playmaking ability, and I think that that kind of stresses them thin a little bit, because Otis Reese is now having to kind of double dip and cover more than I don't know if Otis Reese would admit it or the defensive staff would admit it, but they would prefer that he's closer to the line of scrimmage and being more active in run support than out in open space covering receivers. But yeah, I mean, it really does put them in a bind when they're in the 3-2-6, because if you bring both linebackers, there's, you know, unless you're dropping someone there in zone out of the six defensive backs, there's a huge void right there in the middle of the field. And then if you bring one of the linebackers, there's one guy having to cover a ton of space. So you're really having to roll the dice, and maybe that's where they're going to have to go. Maybe they're just going to have to go the Todd Grantham route and just blitz until your eyes bleed. Just to try to, you know, we talked about it a lot a couple of years ago with the defense, where they had a ton of athletes that were inexperienced and undersized, but it was just, you know, hey, just create as much havoc, create as much chaos as possible, and just try to get turnovers. I think that's kind of where they're going to have to go from here, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we've talked about this before, not on the podcast, but just in general. Like, defense now is all about like efficiency, right? So it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care when people say, oh, well, we allowed more yards than all but two teams in the country last year. Like, that total yards don't matter. But the biggest problems we had last year is we couldn't get off the field on third downs and, you know, or even get to the point where we had third downs. But I think that we have to get to the point where we are causing havoc plays and making stuff difficult, right? Like, what will ultimately happen if we blitz more and all that is that we'll give up more chunk plays, right? We'll give up more chunk yardage, and there'll be one-on-ones that we lose on the outsides and they score touchdowns, but like, they're scoring touchdowns anyway, you know? Mm-hmm. So you might as well just make it so that, you know, sometimes you pick it off, or sometimes like there's just an errant throw that, you know, and then it's third and eight. And then it's like, well, then, you know, we have to somewhat like our chances on third and eight, to be able to hold the team. I think that one thing that's a little bit weird about the defensive play calling so far is that we've put a lot of resources into having spies for the quarterbacks. Like Chance Campbell, you know, to your point earlier, is almost always employed to spy the quarterback when he's out there. And that's fine. But no quarterback has made us pay when we have not done that, right? KJ Jefferson made us pay even when we did it. So right. It's not like we've had a time where we try to just blitz that dude a lot, you know, and like a game where he's coming. And then the opposing quarterback just runs like crazy against us and we have to scrap it. Like, we have never seen that. The only thing we've seen is it's worked in stopping some quarterbacks from being able to achieve that, right? Malik Cunningham especially. But it did not work against KJ Jefferson. And what did we sacrifice by not getting him off his game with more blitzes? Could it have been worse for him? Like, he had 85 yards. He only rushed for 4.3 yards per carry. But I mean, I think we all know that he sort of devastated on the ground and really kept them in the game. And kudos to that dude. I know that he really wanted to come to Ole Miss and that whole narrative is very played, but kudos to him. I think that he played a really solid game. I just keep coming back to this. Like, does the defense have an objective other than get the offense off the field? Right. Like, is it, hey, we're going to try to utilize this great aspect of our team or like something we do well and try to do this, whatever those things are. It doesn't seem like there's anything. It's just like, we're just going to go out there and we're going to hope that the offense messes up. And that's not really a way to play defense, you know?
Yeah. And it's certainly not a way to play when you're staring down the barrel of an SEC schedule. A lot is on the line for the goals that you have for this season. But look, I mean, I just think with the personnel that they have, that they're going to have to try to make it work.
I think if anything,
they're just going to have to just be like, you know what, we're going to have to leave voids and we're just going to have to try to create pressure. And
that's precisely what they should do, because
someone makes a mistake.
The defense that we're running right now is predicated on having good players. And look, like, some of them are good. I'm not saying that all the entire defense sucks, but obviously, like, you look at, look, Arkansas had 676 yards of offense. And I just finished saying that total yards don't matter as much, but 676, that is bad no matter what. Yeah. And so, yes, there are bad players that start on the defense.
I'll say the only time 676 isn't bad is when you win. And when you win in a national title game, because you won a national title. So who cares?
Sure. Who cares? Yeah, exactly.
But when it's this point in the season, it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But the keep everything in front of you, rush three, it works well if you have five stars all over the place, right? Like, mm-hmm. they can make a consistent play. Those three down linemen can get pressure sometimes. And, you know, like, that's going to work. But we don't. We have to try to make stuff happen, and we're not trying to make anything happen.
Yeah. All right. I think we're past the point of speaking into existence for the defense to get better very quickly. So we'll move on to talk Tennessee here. Tennessee coming off of a 25-point win over South Carolina. It's two in a row for the Volunteers. After losing to Florida 38-14 a couple weeks ago, Vols are kind of feeling themselves now after two SEC wins, albeit it's against two very bad SEC teams right now. I would say Missouri's kind of teetering on the edge of being not very good, and then South Carolina is just in year one of a first-year head coach, and they just don't really have anything offensively to help out Luke Doty. But it appears that Tennessee has found their quarterback. Hendon Hooker has been really impressive the last 2 weeks. He's thrown for six touchdowns. I believe he's over 400 yards last two games. So he's spreading the ball around. He's a threat to run the football. Tyon Evans is kind of starting to shape into an SEC running back for them. Velus Jones is a good receiver. They've got some holes here and there. And Josh Heupel's offense, although it might be starting to round out into shape here in year one, I still think that this one is a bit of a toss-up. If you want to give the edge to Tennessee because it's at home, I don't think that there's any kind of revenge factor here. None of these players know anything about Lane Kiffin's 1 year in Knoxville. If anything, the only revenge aspect will just be some fans that are holding a stupid grudge against Lane Kiffin for taking his dream job.
Well, and you have to think also, I think, you know, Josh Heupel and Jeff Lebby were coached together at UCF, right?
Yeah, sure. So, same staff.
So they probably, like, you know, have some relative friendship. And so, you know, it's probably not nearly as personal for any of the coaches involved. I mean, I guess maybe Kiffin, but Kiffin, it's not like he really either was dicked over by Tennessee or dicked them over. I mean, I guess they would argue he dicked them over, but he left them in a much better situation even a year after signing with or coaching for them than he walked into. And it's not his fault, you know, that they made a terrible coaching hire right after him.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, if I pull it up, the line opened.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, while you're pulling that up, I mean, I know a lot of people have sort of alluded to the idea that Ole Miss should hit the transfer portal for quarterbacks or a quarterback in the offseason, and I agree. We could do a lot worse than Tennessee did with Hendon Hooker. That was a pretty decent acquisition. I mean, he even played well against Florida. I mean, he didn't play amazingly against Florida, but, you know, he did his job. I think that he is not super duper scary to the SEC, but he could be quite scary to the Ole Miss defense.
Yeah,
especially
for sure.
Because of the running threat that he is.
Yeah, because he seems to be pretty consistent with making plays when things break down or he has to get outside the pocket. And again, honestly, I don't want to dwell on it, but it comes back to the defense just finishing plays, because it does you no good if they're there at the line of scrimmage and they completely whiff on a sack, or they're there on a 3rd and 8 when the quarterback gets out the pocket and you make the stop to, you know, force a 4th and 5. Like, it does you no good if they don't make the stop or they don't make the tackle. So that's has to be a point of emphasis in practice this week, because you know that Josh Heupel saw what KJ Jefferson did, and they're going to try to do some of the same things to stress the defense. Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting matchup. Odd Shark has a predicted score of 45-32 Ole Miss. I think it'll be closer than that.
Yeah.
And now maybe that's just a little bit of a knee jerk a week after Ole Miss gives up damn near 700 yards. But is it fool's gold? Is Tennessee actually legitimate on offense, or is it just a product of playing two bad teams? I did look at a friend of mine pointed this statistic out, a friend of the show, Justin Kemp, shout out to him. He shared a very interesting tidbit about the Tennessee offense and how bad they've been in the second half. So first half, the offense has been outstanding. They've been churning, just gobbling up yards and points, but second half scoring against SEC opponents right now, 0 against Florida, 17 against Missouri, and only 7 against South Carolina. So could it be running out of gas, hitting a wall, or maybe dialing it back a little bit because the game was sort of in hand? I mean, it certainly wasn't the case against Florida because they've been losing. Maybe against Missouri because they put up so many points. Maybe South Carolina, they're trying to maybe call the dogs off a little bit to get ready for the Ole Miss game. I don't know, but you can't really look away from that number right there. Only 7 points in the second half against South Carolina. So it's going to be a tough test for their defense that has some holes up front. And I think that if you're Snoop Connor, you're Henry Parrish, and you're this offensive line, after just getting bashed after the Alabama game and how poorly they played, I think they're probably licking their proverbial chops heading into this game, where they really want to get a piece of that defensive line in Knoxville and to try to establish the run again.
Yeah. I'm not concerned about our offense, of course, against Tennessee, but as we're going to say every single game for the rest of the year, I'm not concerned about our offense, but our defense could be in trouble. And it's so frustrating that we're going to continuously say that, because again, we can't stop either the pass or the run. So it's not as if like there will be a time we encounter a matchup and say like, oh, the defense matches up well against this team because blah, 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 blah. That is not going to happen. It's just, there could be a time where the defense plays against an opponent that's so bad that it won't matter that they're bad. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not concerned to get about the Vanderbilt offense against our defense.
Sure.
But Tennessee, I mean, you just quoted a 13-point spread that was predicted. Is that right?
Yeah, 45.3 to 32.9 is what their predicted score is.
So that means that Ole Miss would have to score. I mean, there are many ways you could do this, right? But in theory, they'd have to score two more touchdowns than Tennessee did. And
which is not all that crazy.
It's not, right? Like, but the only way that really happens based on the current path, right, is that Ole Miss scores like every time it scores a touchdown, like every time it has the ball, and Tennessee is stopped twice, right? Like, we wouldn't ever expect the defense to stop Tennessee five or six times in the game, would we?
Oh, yeah, that kind of leads into what my next question for you was going to be. Do you think it's worse for the offense to have the pressure on them to score constantly or for the defense to feel like they have to get stops constantly? And maybe those are, you know, mutually exclusive there. Maybe it's kind of the same thing, but I feel like with the defense struggling to get stops and to keep people out of the end zone, I don't think that affects what Jeff Levy and Matt Corral are doing. I really don't, because you could see it on
because
Saturday.
Because it's Matt Corral, yeah.
Yeah, I think that you could see, and I don't mean to cut you off before you answer, but I was going to say, like, the play calling never really changed on Saturday, even when it looked like Ole Miss was on the ropes. They kind of they stuck to what was working, and the plan stayed the same. They ran the football, and they took their shots when they had them, and I think that, like you said, it certainly helps the offense and then some to have number two under center.
Yeah, I think that what you see so let me answer your question. So you said, do you think that it's harder when everything rests on the offense versus everything resting on the defense? And I think that in general, you would want to have a really great defense and an offense that wasn't especially great because they could kind of get some points. But if your defense is amazing, then, you know, they'll be able to stop it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not with like modern college football, but if we could get to the point where we had literally an elite, fantastic, unbelievable defense and a, you know, vanilla, not a super good, but adequate offense, that's a pretty good spot to be in. But I think that right now we're in this really unique situation where Matt Corral is so incredible and so good and so reliable that the opposing offense can feel like we have to score every time, mm-hmm. you know, because Ole Miss's offense is going to score. And so I think that can put a lot of pressure. Now, it didn't this past week. It didn't the week before, but I think that it can put a lot of pressure on opposing offenses to feel like they have to make big plays, and that could lead to big negative plays.
Yeah, and I think the answer is defense. I mean, I think it's put so much more stress on the defense having to make plays, because for the most part, I mean, look, on Saturday I almost put together some really long drives. I'd have to go back and look at the drive chart, but the offense can score quickly when they want to, more times than not. Defense is probably going to be out there longer, putting more stress on them to stay on the field and, you know, shuffle in bodies left and right to keep people fresh. But I mean, I think an Ole Miss fan would feel far more comfortable with the offense having to respond or the offense having to win the game because of the equalizer of not only having the best quarterback in the country, but you also have the run game. I mean, I think right now, I don't think Ole Miss fans would trade anybody's backfield for what they have with Henry Parrish and Snoop Connor. The offensive line has responded. I think I would venture to guess that week of practice and the film sessions after the Alabama game weren't kind. So, you know, they were kind of, you know, put on the spot, like, hey, we got to respond. And hey, by the way, we're playing a top 15 SEC team that is playing as good as anybody and has a top 10 defense. And they responded. So you got to give credit to them. But yeah, it's a difficult question. I think it just kind of depends on, you know, what your flavor is in terms of, do you prefer offense or defense? But yeah, I mean, I think Ole Miss fans probably feel much better if the game's on the line and you have the football in Matt Corral's hands, as opposed to how it was on Saturday when the defense had to come up big. I don't think there was anyone that wasn't about to, you know, put their lunch on somebody in front of them in the stands.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, I think we about covered it. We hit pretty much everything. We talked all the highs for the offense and all the lows for the defense, and we look ahead to Tennessee. That's going to do it for this episode of Podcast Rebellion. We'll have plenty of coverage for this week's game in Knoxville at redcuprebellion.com. We'll have our preview show, gambling show this week. So stay on the lookout for that as we turn the page to the Tennessee Vols. Ole Miss is now back up top 15 again. Tennessee's not in the polls, but it'll be a doozy. So for JUCO, I'm Zach. This has been Podcast Rebellion. Thank y'all for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon. We out.